Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone and welcome to this episode of Only Murders in My Mind. And as usual, I have Liz Hedgecock with me.
Hello.
And Mike Jackson.
Hello, Carol. Hello, Liz.
So how are you both?
Fine. Busy talking because I was podcasting on a different podcast this morning.
Oh, you can't take who away from us.
I was just guesting. So, nice. Yes, I was on the UK Crime Book Club's Criminally Inspired podcast. So yes, that'll be going out, I think, somewhere towards the end of October.
Right, so you know, we'll give you an update if we can, and let you know.
Maybe
when
put
it's
a
out.
Link on the blog,
yes,
or
I
something
think
like
probably
that.
Be the best thing to do.
Indeed. Oh, it's interesting being on a different podcast,
yes,
and seeing how they do
how
things.
The professionals do.
Well, there was the point when my cat jumped up and walked across the keyboard, so I had to remove her Sharpish. So we had to kind of redo that bit.
Yes, yeah, that's good, just cats.
Good job it wasn't live.
No,
do you want a joke?
No, I don't want a joke.
Knock, knock.
Who's the?
A broken pencil.
A broken pencil who?
Never mind, it's pointless.
Oh.
Okay, knock, knock.
Who's there?
The interrupting cow.
Who? Oh, we started doing this, and I really think we shouldn't have done. What did the scarecrow? Why did the scarecrow win an award?
I don't
go on.
Because he was outstanding in his field.
Oh.
Should we stop this now?
Yeah, I think we should.
So, yeah. Actually,
we do want to keep listeners, not drive them away.
Please stay. Please stay.
Please, if you like the jokes.
If you want to comment about whether you want us to do more jokes or not, you know, we will abide by that. Oh, no. I'm just imagining some, like, sadistic people out there going, we want a whole episode of jokes.
Yeah,
please don't.
We have got a few questions. Mike's got them in his hand.
Yeah, Mike's been collating them.
He has, from our listeners, and we're going to try these, as you will probably realise very quickly, have not been looked at. They've not been rehearsed. We don't know what Mike's going to bring
us up. Rehearse.
this should be interesting, but it's something we've wanted to do. So here goes.
Yes. Yeah, we've talked for this for a while of having a Q&A session. So here goes. And had one through from somebody called Olivia from Canterbury. And she says, do you reckon crime fiction these days is starting to feel a bit samey, or are writers still coming up with clever new ways to surprise us?
It's difficult. As a writer, you're always looking to surprise your readers, and it can be difficult. I don't know what you
think.
Well,
it's tricky because there's so much that's gone before these days. I mean, I suppose my thing is, you do see quite a lot of, you know, psychological thrillers where it's a female police inspector and, you know, she's married to the job, she's neglecting her family, you know, maybe she's drinking a bit too much and et cetera, et cetera. And she has a troubling connection to the killer. And you do feel like, okay, I've seen that before, but it's all in how well done it is.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, one of the ones I'm thinking of as I was thinking about that question is one that Liz and I have both talked about recently in previous episodes, which we both enjoyed, and that's In the Blink of an Eye. Mm. Now, that's different because it's using AI, which is new.
Yes, and it's a really good twist on the, you know, experienced cop has a new partner that they have to work with and they don't like.
Right. Yes, yeah, that happens a lot, doesn't it?
But it's a great twist on
it. And it is a clever new way of surprising us.
Yeah. So I think, as Liz said, I think it's the way it's crafted. And
because you said, Mike, haven't you, there's like seven plots, seven stories in the world.
And it's how you interpret them to make them. Otherwise, it could all become very samey.
Yeah, nothing's new. So I'm going to throw this over to you, Mike. Do you think if we used AI more to write stories, they would be samey?
Ooh.
No, I don't think they would. And the reason for that is that Many people seem to think that AI can write stories, and AI can't write stories. AI can only write stories depending on what the human being, the author, asks of it. So it's very much down to the prompt. So if you want to get AI to give you ideas for a story, it can do. If you want AI to give you ideas for a story to help you write a story and you want it to be different, then you have to keep prompting in terms of saying, no, this is a bit the same as, or this is not quite unique. Can you try it again? And because it's got access to this large language model, these millions and millions of words that it's got from all sorts of places, it will go on ad infinitum. You know, it will keep giving you ideas until it does possibly come up with something you think, oh, that's new.
That's quite good.
I don't think I would have thought of that one.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, also, I suppose, you may be bounded by your own imagination and your own experience of crime fiction. Mm. Yeah. You know, if you've not read that many, you might think that, you know, a crime story where this happens is, you know, really fresh and original. Actually, you know, it's been done multiple times.
Yeah,
it's a bit like thinking of AI being as many different crime writer, murder mystery writers, and you're going to brainstorm with them to come up with a new idea.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it.
Although you might then end up with a story that's been written by committee.
Yes, yes, yeah. You know, and again, it's all down to that interaction you have.
Yeah. Go on, what's the next question?
Ethan from Edinburgh asks, yeah, hello, Ethan. Thanks for your question. What makes a murder mystery twist so good that it blows your mind? Have you got any favourite examples that you'd left you stunned? Great question, Ethan. Thanks.
Oh, now the problem is I don't want to reveal the twist because that would spoil it for any future reader.
I suppose the general question, though, is what makes a twist good?
Okay. I've got one. I'm not going to reveal who the characters are, but basically there's been a series of murders and, you know, the detective is going back through them all and explaining it. And psychic says, so who did kill that person? And the response is, you did. And it was completely by accident. It was completely not meant at all. And it was a lot of coincidences and happenings. And that person had no idea what they were doing. It was completely innocent. But nevertheless, you know, through all these things, somebody died. And it's like, I would never have got that because you're so busy thinking who wanted to do it. You know, who could have possibly... It was a poisoning, so who could possibly have got that into the drink? And we were all in the room and we should all have seen it and we should all have known. And yet, even so, it managed to surprise.
I think it's that element of surprise, isn't it? Because I'm thinking of a story that again, we've talked about.
Why didn't I see? I think particularly when all the evidence is there, you could have worked it out, but you just did not make that final leap.
Yeah, so another one, but this one we've talked about before.
Yes.
Harlan Coben's You Only Fool Me Once. Fool Me Once. Which, again, was made into a film locally here at Arley Hall. But the thing, again, try not to give the story away, but the thing I like about
please
that...
Please don't, because I haven't read it yet.
...was the fact that in the end, the person you'd almost empathise most with throughout the story... turns out not to be quite
what you thought they were. I found that really good. Yes. I found that one really good. I'm trying to think of one that blew me away and I can't at the moment, I must admit, but that one did. Yeah. That's the most recent one where I've gone, wow, at the end, yeah.
And I think sometimes it's not necessarily just a story. It might even be a murder mystery that has been a film or a series.
Yeah. Or a slightly different kind of feel, but if you've seen The Usual Suspects.
No.
No. No? Oh, well, there's a brilliant twist in that. All right. And I'm not going to say what it is. I mean, I had actually guessed who done it, but the bit at the end, you're like, no way. Just what the actual, and you're literally like, no. Yeah. You know, and I'd already guessed that it was that person, but even so, it was like... I don't believe this, you know.
I think sometimes the clever one, going back to that Harlan Coben one, is where the writer is able to get you to empathise with a particular character to the point you don't even believe it could possibly be him or her. It's got to be somebody else.
I'm watching one at the moment and it's called The Apple Doesn't Fall Far From the Tree.
Oh, I haven't watched that, but is it good?
Yes, and I'm about halfway through because, you know, it's the sort of thing I watch when I'm cooking and stuff. And I haven't got a clue so far.
No. No,
there are arrows pointing in so many directions. It's really well written, yeah. So that'd be interesting, yeah.
Oh, another really good one with a twist, actually, is... Oh, God, I'm trying to think what it's called now. It's by Josephine Tay. I cannot remember what it's called. Come back to me on that one.
Yeah. And I think, too, I mean, I've recently been reading a book of short stories, which were all set... all written, rather, sort of early 1900s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where there was no forensics or anything like that. Mm. It's just somebody works out what it is. And they are so unbelievably dull, in as much as it's obvious who did it. There's no twist at all. Oh. And surprisingly, and these at the time were top stories. Yeah. These were deemed to be really good.
The bestsellers type
murder
of the,
mystery
of the
short stories, and they're so, and I think it's because we've come to live in such a complicated world,
and it's fast paced as well,
that we need things to be you know, we won't take anything at face value. I think the twist now has to be very, very clever,
yes,
for us to accept it.
The book I was talking about is To Love and Be Wise.
All right, no.
So it's not a well-known one, but it is fascinating. There are things about it that I'm a bit ooh about, but it's a fascinating read. You know, I'm not sure I'll read it again, but that first time, you're like, whoa. It's great.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right, you ready for another one?
Yep, go on then.
All right, we've got a great question here from Sebastian in Manchester. And he wants to know that when we're writing a mystery, do you think it's more important to get the character spot on, or is it all about a cracking good plot?
Two things go together, really, though, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I suppose you could have some cracking characters and a lousy plot.
Yeah. You could. And I think you'd probably get away with that possibly better. Mm. So I think the thing is, if you don't care about the characters, then the plot can be as clever as anything.
That's true.
And I think I've read some books like that where you think, well, I am just going to finish it to find out, you know, how it resolves, but I'm not bothered.
Yeah, yeah, I've read one or two where one I did finish and the other one I got halfway through and thought, I'm really not bothered who killed this person anymore.
I suppose, as you say, you've got to believe in the character. As a reader, you've got to believe that these characters will interact, and
there are characters in the stories that you don't want to be guilty. They might not be brilliant people. They might not be a bit on the nasty side. And then there's the vicar that's really nice, that's actually stabbing everybody in the back and
harsh
that sort of thing. But yeah, I think you're probably right. If you're invested in the character, you might get away with a weak
plot
story. You just might, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, before I say, probably not something to aim for.
No, we're not advocates of that.
Right, moving on. Sophie from Oxford. With all this, and this will, Carol, you'll enjoy this one. With all this true crime stuff being so popular now, do you think it's changing the way crime fiction is written? Should writers be careful about crossing any lines?
Ooh, what sort of lines?
Well, I must admit, I'm with Sophie on this one. I've always thought that when you're writing something, if it's too close to what might be real life, I find that awkward. I'd find that difficult. I don't like to read. I don't like watching
true crime.
Mm. No, I never watch.
Don't like reading real crime. I know Carol does. Mm. And I don't. I'm not quite sure why I don't.
But I mean, I like the psychology of the murderer. I like to see what makes them tick. But I can see what you mean, because we know that saying, and we've said this before. True life is much stranger than fiction.
Yeah. Mm.
And there are some things that we know about that we would go, that would never happen, and it's actually happened in true life. Whereas, you know, if you wrote it, people would go, "Come on," that sort of thing. I think some writers, and I'm a bit gory myself. I do write a little bit.
You are.
I do like write a bit about, you know, sort of.
Must admit, read some of your good heavens, Carol,
people being
really
tortured and stuff. But, yeah, there are some writers out there where it is really like when you're reading it, you're going.
Yeah, so I remember starting a book once and thinking, I just cannot continue with this. It's so horrible.
Yeah.
There was a popular one years ago, and it was a child telling a story from the grave, and I can't remember what it was called now. Very, very, and I could not read that.
No.
The child had been murdered, and the child was telling the story.
Right.
As a ghost.
As you do. It wasn't The Lovely Bones, was
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
I do have that, but I haven't read it.
But Sophie's right, isn't she? Because there have been a number of television programmes recently which have been dramas based on real murders.
And
I won't watch those.
No.
I don't know whether it's that line again. You know, I like a drama to be a drama, you know, fictional.
Yes.
I don't like... And we've had this conversation before. When we did that episode, when we talked about Victorian... Yes, true life crimes.
Yes.
We made the decision to talk about Victorian true life crimes rather than more modern true life crimes.
Yes.
So I think Sophie's right. There is that line there, which for some people it's tough, difficult to cross over.
Yeah. True.
And I think for me, because I tend to write at the cozier end of the spectrum anyway, it's possibly not quite the same.
And I think it's one of the reasons why I probably like to read historical crime, murder mystery, or... more fantasy, more sci-fi, because it takes it out
takes
of
you away.
Out of the this could actually happen
yeah,
to you
out of real life sort of yeah. it takes you into
that's why I like Stranger Times
yes
because it does take you to another world
yeah, it takes you into
the
imaginary world
or the fantasy yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like being able to sleep at night personally.
Tom from Glasgow wants to know, do you prefer detectives who are practically geniuses or the ones who are a bit more, you know, human and flawed?
Flaws. There we go.
Yeah, I like flaws.
Yeah, yeah. I think we all do, because then you can see yourself in them, can't you? You can say, well, yeah, I can understand why they did that because, you know.
It's why we like John Rebus.
Yes, Monk. He's very clever, but very flawed, isn't he?
Yes.
You know, he's always, I just want to look after him.
Does that mean to say that we don't like the geniuses? Because, I mean, you'd put Sherlock Holmes as a genius, you'd put Poirot as geniuses.
I know, we like them for a different reason, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm just trying to think... the detective.
I think the thing is also, if you look at kind of modern interpretations of Sherlock, there's more emphasis on the, you know, yes, he's great at these things, but
he's
you know,
flawed in certain, yes. Yeah, relationships. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, if you read some of the original stories, it's like, you know, someone will come with a case and Sherlock will like sit in his room for 3 days smoking tobacco and then he'll come out and, you know, solve the mystery. And it's not really... I mean, you know, the solution's great and everything, but you don't get to see any of how it all, you know. Whereas I think if you're writing them nowadays, you just couldn't get away with that.
No.
No, you couldn't. You've got to plot it better.
I mean, is that why writers of modern day murder mysteries or crime tend to go for flawed people rather than go for the geniuses of the world? Because I can't think of any modern writers that I've read where they've got a Poirot or a Sherlock Holmes character. When you think of all the ones that we've talked about, nine times out of ten, it's been a flawed.
Yeah, the ones that we'd put into that category are from another age, aren't they? They've been written years ago. So yeah, I mean, it's going back to the thing Liz said about the female detectives, you know, drinking too much and she's losing the connection with her children but she's had an affair with the killer and all that sort of thing.
Is that part of what society represents society today, that nobody's perfect, so that if you're going to have somebody who is a police inspector trying to solve a crime, he's going to have a drink problem or a marriage problem.
I mean, I suppose the other
whatever.
Thing is, the Sherlock Holmes stories are almost all short stories.
Yes.
So you've only got a certain amount of space to get everything done. So, you know, you don't really get a chance to flesh him out. Yes, he's got his amusing accessories. He's got his Persian slipper. He's got his dressing gown. He's, you know, shooting VR into the wall. He'll go and play his violin for a bit and all those things, which sort of, I don't know, sort of stand in for character, I suppose, in some ways.
I mean,
he's got his addiction.
Yes.
Yes, his heroin.
But if we were to write a murder mystery today where the detective leading it was a woman with a perfect marriage, no problems at all, would it make for a dull story? Do people expect the person...
If she did everything right, then yes. I mean, unless the killer then, like, kidnaps one of her family and, you know, adds a whole new exciting twist.
Or everybody around her, she's like, she's the circus ringmaster, and she's having to keep, you know, everybody around her on a level playing field as well, because they're all flawed. I think the thing is,
someone would have to kill her, and that would be the actual.
It almost sounds as though we're saying that if you're a genius and you're normal, you haven't got a place in crime fiction. We're not interested in you.
Get down to reality. I mean, I've had police officers in my family, and it's a fact of life that it is one of the highest rates of divorce and separation, that particular occupation. And I don't know what it is like now, but it used to be one where there was an awful lot of drinking used to go on, an awful lot.
Well, I imagine it's a coping mechanism, isn't it? They work long hours.
So that side of it, you know, when you get the female who's got a perfect marriage and is doesn't drink, she's going to get a hard time off her colleagues, isn't she?
So in other words, normal people are boring, so we can't write
I suppose that's what it boils down to.
It does. Yes.
We want a character, don't we? We want somebody. I mean,
your Wen's got pretty decent habits. I mean, she's got a bit of a junk food thing going on. And she works too much and stuff like that.
In fact, she eats junk food either and things like that. She's sort of very stable, really, but all our detectives all need looking after.
Where this changes, I think, and you know, Liz would be able to answer this one.
Oh God,
changes. Well, I think it changes if you start going to the cosy mystery, because your cosy mystery main protagonists usually are fairly level-headed and normal. I'm just thinking of your Pippa story.
She's reasonably. I mean, she's got kids to cope with.
Yes,
but she's got too much to do.
But she's not a drug addict or an alcoholic or
yet.
Yet.
You don't know what happens when she solves the mysteries.
I suppose the thing, once she did become all those things, it stops being a cosy mystery.
Then again, I mean, in the Booker and Fitch ones that I do with Paula, I mean, my character Jade, you know, she's got her various kind of hang-ups and, you know, problems and whatnot. And, I mean, they've generally got some sort of baggage, whatever it might be. And sometimes it's their feelings of inadequacy with their normal life, or, you know, even that they know they shouldn't be getting involved, but they can't help themselves. And maybe they're getting flack from the community about it. So it's a different set of problems. And, yeah, it's fairly low level compared to, you know, my husband's going to divorce me because I can't stop working.
Yeah. Actually, it takes us quite nicely into another question.
We aim to please.
From Amy from Bath. Do you think a good crime story can be cosy, or does it need a bit of grit to really hook the reader?
Or it can be cosy and
non-gritty.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on your reader, doesn't it? Some readers are quite happy with cosy crime, you know, and there are people out there who are like, well, I only read like serial killer stories. And you just think, well, I'm probably not for you then.
Yeah. It's a very popular genre, cosy mystery.
When you think of like Death in Paradise and Midsommar Murders and Agatha Raisin and all those, I love them.
Yes.
Because you don't see the person being decapitated, you know, and they're always in nice settings sort of thing.
It's going to be a happy ending, and it's good versus evil, and good always comes out on top.
And the thing is, if you look at Agatha Christie, there's generally not horrendous amounts of gore.
No.
And she seems to have done okay for herself.
Yeah. Just a bit.
Yeah. So it depends on the reader. And it depends what you classify as a bit of grit. I mean, yeah, there probably is going to need to be a dead body.
Yes. But it could be popped away at a playgroup somewhere.
Yeah. Leave it in the kitchen, problems.
Without too much blood.
Yeah.
Callum from Sheffield. What's the best way to keep readers guessing without completely confusing them? Or is a bit of confusion part of the fun?
You don't want them confused. You want them...
Well, a bit of confusion.
I was going to say, do a nice red herring.
Yeah. You don't want them to be scratching their head when you've told them the answer.
No, that's true. But yeah, I mean, you can always like chuck a red herring in.
Yes.
You don't want them at the end going, I really didn't understand any of that.
Yeah.
And actually, one of our early podcast episodes was all about red herrings. If you want to go back and listen to it.
Yes, it was.
I don't know what you
Yeah, it was a it was a tour de force in a sort of a way, I recall.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, what else do you think about that one?
It's the best way to keep readers guessing.
Yeah.
I suppose the best way to keep readers guessing.
Well, you definitely need more than one suspect.
That's
so
right,
if you have a range of suspects.
Dropping clues.
Hopefully various different motives.
Yeah. And I suppose you've got to, it's almost like a story arc. You've got to sort of look as though you're coming to a climax and then suddenly, oh, something pops in and you're back to,
and
it's
the thing
forever
is,
building
if you
up
have,
that story, isn't
if
it?
If you have more than one suspect, they've got to be plausible.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 You know, and probably some sort of, either some sort of uncertainty about when it might have happened, or alternatively, it looks like it's a dead cert, but it couldn't possibly have been that person, which is always interesting.
Yeah. And going back to what we were saying earlier about things like The Cozy Mystery, and only I was just thinking about what's the one that happens abroad? The murder, Cozy Mystery on television.
Murder in Paradise.
Murder in Paradise.
Yeah.
Always starts off with a group of people.
Yes.
And then one of them gets killed.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have possibly been the other four.
Because they were all...
But they're all suspects.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that is one of those where the detective, something drops into his head right at the end, and he gets them all together and tells them why he knows who. And that's a proper light Hercule Poirot type of ending, isn't it? Where he gets them all in the dining room or something.
I do quite like that sort of thing, though, where you get everybody together.
Yeah. And they're all
not
going,
remotely
wasn't,
dangerous.
It wasn't me. I didn't do
but,
it.
But that confusion bit is in there, isn't
yes.
it? And funny enough, that bit about getting everybody together, this new programme that's on television at the moment with David Mitchell, Ludwig.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He likes to get everybody together at the end to show how the murder was committed.
That is so funny because he can show you how the murder was committed and then perhaps not know who the murderer is.
I need to watch this series. I haven't.
Well, you do.
I'm not saying any more.
No, it's quite funny because he's playing the part of a detective, but he's not. I won't go into more of that.
But isn't he a crossword?
Yes, he's yeah. So he solves these murders through
logic.
Yeah, through puzzles and so on.
Yeah.
And then he'll say, "Okay, so it was definitely Carol who did the murder," and one of his colleagues will say, "Have we got any evidence?" No, we're going to have to wait for Carol to confess. And 9 times out of 10, they do, which is very convenient.
Isn't it just?
Oh, no, it is. It's very good. Yeah. Is it cryptologist? Is that what somebody that does crossword puzzles?
He's logic and puzzles and all sorts. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a different take.
It's really enjoyable.
Yeah. I think the thing is, if you've got too much stuff going on, that can be a bit much for the reader.
Yes.
So, I mean, for example, if there's like lots and lots and lots of people getting killed and there's all sorts of clues everywhere, then it's like you just don't know where to start.
And that can be one of some of the confusing, where the confusion can come in if you've got too many characters. Because as you're reading, you're then thinking, oh, hang on, I'm going to skip back a bit. I can't remember who she was or how they came into the story.
I think if you've got a fair few characters and you can kind of clear a lot of them away.
Way early
so on. That you're maybe left with 3 or 4 who could potentially have done it. And then you can kind of work on that. But then maybe you have another crime and then it might be a different set of people who had the opportunity and maybe had a motive as well.
One more question and then you've got something to read to us, haven't you?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I think so.
Okay, let's see. I've still got a couple. In fact, I've got a few here. We can always do some more of these. Ella from Reading. I like this one, Ella. Have you ever read a mystery that was so clever you wish you'd written it yourself?
Yes.
And what's one that stands out?
Oh. Josephine Tay Bratfarrer. I read that at school and it made a real impression on me.
All right.
There you go.
For me, it's in the blink of an eye. And that's because yeah. I've got a fascination with AI at the moment.
Yeah. But I thought it was incredibly clever.
Yes, it was very, very yes. clever.
Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh right. yes, that's yes. a good one. Yeah. Murder of Roger Ackroyd.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah, that's like, Liz, the first time I read that book, I thought, oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. I was a bit like that when I read Tolkien, Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a massive, massive tome of a thing
it
to read.
It is, yes.
But it's a fascinating story, so much intrigue.
I've never been able to get my teeth into that because of all the names. You know what you're saying about
yes,
your
names.
Wife?
Yeah.
All the names are so similar and I just got totally confused. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I've read War and Peace twice. I love Tolstoy.
Yeah. yeah.
I've read most of his famous books. But yeah, Lord of the Rings, I was doing my head in, basically. And I love it. As mentioned last week, I'm currently writing a novella. If you're interested, please visit our blog listed below and listen to the next chapter. I would really like your feedback.
What I've done is taken these chapters that Carol's reading out and used AI to make an audio, and I'm putting the audio on the blog if you'd have a look at, because Carol's very keen. These are very first drafts, and she's keen to see what you think about them, so she'd welcome any feedback on them.
Yeah, there will be mistakes, there will be errors. It is basically as it's come off
well,
the computer.
The first draft,
yeah,
isn't
that,
it?
That's so, the whole yeah. idea. And you've got something you want to read?
Well, you keep on about this novelette of
yes.
mine.
Yeah, and I believe we've had a couple of questions about it as well from people who've written in.
Yeah, people, well, they started off by asking, you know, how's Mike's novella going? And I think I have explained that I've gone from a novella, which was, that's far too much like hard work. That's nearly 40,000 words. Anyway, thanks to Liz, I've discovered novelettes. And I can get away with 15,000 words, well, it's a novel. Well, in my eyes, it is. You might call it a novelette. I'll call it. Anyway, I've had a few ideas floating around, and here's one which I'm still not sure about. So I'll read you the beginning of chapter one, and it's called. Well, chapter one is called Rock Bottom. The incessant pounding wasn't just in Jack Harlow's head. He jolted awake, nearly falling off the worn leather couch in his office, a half-empty whiskey bottle clattering to the floor. The pounding continued, and Jack realised it was coming from his door. He squinted at his watch. 7:03 a.m. Who the hell was trying to break down this door this ungodly hour? Harlow, open up! Mr. Patel's voice cut through the fog of Jack's hangover. We need to talk about the rent. Jack groaned, running a hand over his stubbled face. The sunlit filtering through the grimy windows felt like daggers in his eyes, illuminating the sorry state of both his office and his life. Faded, peeling wallpaper, stacks of unsolved case files, an eviction notice sat on his desk that he'd been trying to ignore. Coming, Mr. Patel, he called out, his voice rough with sleep and whiskey. Just give me a minute. As he stumbled to his feet, Jack caught sight of his reflection in the cracked mirror on the wall. Bloodshot eyes stared back at him from a face that had seen better days, much like everything else in Jack Harlow's world. Jack fumbled with the lock, finally wrenching the door open. Mr. Patel stood there, arms crossed, his usually genial face set in a grim expression. Mr. Harlow, Patel began, his voice tinged with reluctance. I hate to do this, but... The rent, Jack finished, rubbing his temple. I know, Mr. Patel, I'm sorry. I just need a bit more time. One big case, that's all I need. Patel sighed, shaking his head. I've heard that before, Jack. I like you, I really do, but I can't run a charity here. You're 2 months behind already. Just give me to the end of the week, Jack pleaded, desperation creeping into his voice. If I don't have it by then, I'll clear out, no fuss. The landlord studied him for a long moment before nodding slowly. End of the week, then, but not a day more, understand? Crystal clear, Jack replied, relief washing over him. Thanks, Mr. Patel, I mean it. As Patel left, closing the door behind him, Jack slumped against the wall. The temporary reprieve felt hollow. He glanced at the framed private detective license on the wall, remembering the day he'd received it. He'd been so full of hope then, so certain that he was embarking on a new, exciting chapter of his life. Now, 5 years later, that hope had curdled into bitter disappointment. The high-profile cases he dreamed of having never materialised. Instead, he scraped by on a diet of cheating spouses, insurance fraud, and the occasional missing pet. And lately, even those meagre pickings had dried up. Jack's eyes fell on the classified section of yesterday's newspaper. Circled job adverts staring back at him. Security guard, night watchman, loss prevention specialist. The jobs he'd been considering as a last resort. Was this really how it was going to end? Not with a bang, but with a whimper. He was just about to reach for the phone to start making those calls he'd been dreading when the door creaked open. Jack looked up. His heart skipped a beat at the sight of a potential client. An elderly woman peered into the office, her eyes scanning the cluttered space before settling on Jack. She was small and bird-like, with wispy white hair and a skin like delicate parchment. Despite the warm day, she wore a heavy tweed coat and clutched a large handbag to her chest like a shield. "Are you the detective?" she asked, her voice quavering slightly. Jack straightened, hope and desperation warming his chest. "Yes, ma'am. Jack Harlow, private investigator. How can I help you?" The woman stepped fully into the office, her eyes darting nervously around as if expecting someone to jump out at her. "It's my photograph," she said, wringing her hands. "Someone's stolen it." That's just the beginning.
You're going to share some more with us then when you've done a bit more?
Yeah, maybe. No, of course I will. I would love to.
Mm. Yeah, picture them all. I can.
Yeah.
Cool. So, good start there.
That's part way through chapter one.
He's going to do it. He's going to do
it. He might do it.
It's not a novella. It's a
novelette. A novelette. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, he might do it, but he might not.
Yeah. See, I think that is chapter one.
I think that would be. Okay,
right.
So that's all for this week. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. Bye for now.
You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music, In Peril, was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.